This week on Vaticano, take a special look at the devotions linked to Medjugorje, which Pope Francis has recently approved. The Vatican honors its relationship with the United States and celebrates 40 years of diplomatic relations. Plus, it's been 800 years since St. Francis of Assisi received the stigmata. Vaticano starts now. Hundreds of global church leaders are preparing for the second and final session of the Synod on Synodality, the three-year process of listening and dialogue that Pope Francis tasked to the bishops of the Catholic Church and laity from around the world, starting in 2021. Also called the 16th Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops, the Synod on Synodality was meant to deepen the missionary perspective of the Church and expose local churches to this method of listening and communion. The question at the heart of this upcoming and final session that spans the month of October is how to be a synodal church in mission. In a press conference with Vatican journalists, the Synod's Secretary General, Cardinal Mario Grech, presented the proposed work for the Assembly and explained that the Synod is first and foremost a time of prayer and listening to the Holy Spirit.
If the Holy Spirit is not invoked, is not present, then it is not a synod. You can call it a convention, an assembly, but not a church gathered to discern.
The Vatican announced several novelties, including a penitential service featuring testimonies and prayers for forgiveness for sins against peace, creation, and families, noting the sex abuse scandal among them. There will also be a prayer vigil and thanksgiving for the ecumenical fruits of the Second Vatican Council, with delegates from different Christian churches and communities in the Piazza of the Proto-Martyrs inside the Vatican walls, where according to immemorial tradition, the Apostle Peter was martyred.
I think ecumenism has done great steps forward by, I think of Cardinal Koch, all the wonderful documents that were done, and perhaps we can pass to another kind of ecumenical dialogue. How can we act together in the world for more peace, for more justice? No, because it's our common mission.
In a first for synods in Rome, a quarter of the participants will not be bishops and will include non-Catholic, fraternal delegates, lay people, religious, and priests. While the guiding document for the second session of the Synod focuses on themes such as lay participation and the role of women in the Church, the real theme of the Synod is the Church itself. Cardinals Grech and Hollerich both stressed the importance of listening to build a synodal community at the level of the parish, the diocese, and the Church.
Because we need to find new method, new ways how we can really walk together. Because there is a lot of richness in the Church. And if we do not listen to one another without excluding anybody, we will miss a big opportunity.
On a practical level, the October Assembly will produce a final document that will be handed over to the Holy Father for his consideration at the end of October. Easter does not happen through our initiative or through one calendar or another, but comes from Christ. This is what Pope Francis said during an audience with the Easter Together 2025 group at the Vatican. On April the 20th, 2025, all Christians will celebrate Easter together. A coincidence in the calendar that Pope Francis hopes will be repeated the following year. In the past, the Catholic Church and the Eastern churches usually had different dates for Easter. For the Pope, the upcoming Easter represents an opportunity. The Holy Father said that he has been asked more than once to seek a solution to this issue, so that the common celebration of the Day of the Resurrection may no longer be an exception, but rather become the norm. The Holy Father encouraged those who embark on this journey to persevere in the search for a possible communion and to avoid anything that could lead to further divisions among the brothers and sisters. The Pontiff underscored the importance to reflect, share, and plan together, always grateful for his call. The Holy Father concluded his speech with the wish of "Let's walk together."
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. Pope Francis has appointed 28 new consultors to the Vatican's Dicastery for the Doctrines of the Faith. This is the body responsible for overseeing doctrinal orthodoxy in the Catholic Church and handling cases of priestly sexual abuse. These new external consultants are experts in theology, canon law, and scripture, and they will join existing consultants to regularly advise the Dicastery's leadership and members. Pope Francis urged participants of the conference on the social use of assets confiscated from the mafia to focus on restoring not only the confiscated assets, but also the well-being of the victims and communities harmed by organized crime. The conference was held at the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences in the Vatican. The Holy Father stressed that it is neither possible nor tolerable to overlook the damage inflicted on the dignity of millions of men and women who suffer due to transnational criminal activities. The Vatican is cooperating with Italian prosecutors in an investigation into the leak of financial information related to the last year's major Vatican finance trial. According to Italian media, two men are under investigation for having gained unauthorized access to a database of suspicious financial activity shared by banks with Italy. This database includes potentially compromising information on Italian politicians and defendants involved in the Vatican trial. In an address to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, Pope Francis emphasized the importance of considering the human and ethical dimensions of scientific and technological progress. He stressed that science must always prioritize using knowledge to uphold and enhance the dignity of individuals and humanity as a whole, while also recognizing the benefits of new advancements. At the 68th session of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA in Vienna, Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, representing the Holy See, reiterated the Vatican's support for nuclear non-proliferation. He emphasized the importance of ensuring the safety of nuclear power stations, particularly those at risk due to conflicts like the war in Ukraine. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with a special look at the devotions linked to Medjugorje, which Pope Francis has recently approved. The Vatican has granted the Nihil Obstat, that is, the green light for the devotion and spiritual experience that began in Medjugorje, a small town in Bosnia-Herzegovina, in June of 1981, when six children reported seeing and receiving messages from the Blessed Virgin Mary, who called herself the Queen of Peace. The decision comes after many years of in-depth investigations, inquiries, and studies, and is contained in the note Queen of Peace, after the name chosen by Our Lady, which focuses on the spiritual experience associated with Medjugorje. The note, signed by Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, prefect of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith and approved by Pope Francis on August the 28th, was released on September the 19th, putting an end to the debated issue that has been going on for more than 40 years. In the press conference held at the Vatican Press Office, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith officially affirmed the Nihil Obstat, bringing a sigh of relief to the millions of pilgrims who continually come to the Shrine of Our Lady of Peace in Medjugorje.
This determination indicates that the faithful can receive a positive stimulus for their Christian life through this spiritual proposal, and public worship is also authorized.
The Vatican Note recognizes the abundance of the spiritual fruits related to the Medjugorje experience and authorizes the faithful to adhere to it, since many positive fruits have occurred and no negative or risky effects have spread among God's people. The Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith granted approval for devotion linked to Medjugorje without affirming the supernatural character of the apparitions of Our Lady.
We do not welcome these messages as private revelations because we do not have the certainty that they are messages from Our Lady. But we welcome them as edifying texts that can stimulate a beautiful spiritual experience.
To delve deeper into the document, the Pontifical Theological Faculty Marianum held a conference on the new norms for the discernment of alleged supernatural phenomena, emphasizing the very special role that Mary plays in the life of the faithful and in the path of salvation.
God became visible through Jesus, and in the same way, Mary continues this work of enculturating with people, speaking their language, adopting their skin color, their clothing, and also becoming part of the people themselves all over the world. We have studies that clearly show this worldwide. Every family desires their own Madonna, so to speak, dressed in their traditions because they feel her as their own mother.
The most significant commission regarding the Medjugorje phenomenon was established in March of 2010 by Pope Benedict XVI. He appointed Italian Cardinal Camillo Ruini to lead a team of cardinals, theologians, psychologists, and other experts. This commission was tasked with a comprehensive investigation into the reported Marian apparitions and their impact, marking a crucial moment in the Church's official inquiry into Medjugorje. Father Salvatore Maria Perrella, then head of the Pontifical Theological Faculty Marianum in Rome, was one of the 17 members of this international commission.
The Church does not easily accept the apparition. That is why there is a process of discernment that has its roots in the Middle Ages until it found a codification in the 1978 norms desired by Paul VI. What do these norms say? When the bishop of a place receives news of an apparition, he must wait, see if this news has consistency, and if this news persists, he has the obligation to call a commission.
In 2016, the commission gave its report to Pope Francis and affirmed the supernatural nature of the first apparitions. It also made several key proposals, including placing Medjugorje under Vatican control, allowing church-organized pilgrimages, and declaring the first apparitions to be authentic. In 2018, Pope Francis named a Vatican official to provide oversight of the pastoral needs of the shrine and of the many pilgrims visiting the site, who provided positive reports. Now the final verdict has come. From now on, the faithful can go freely on pilgrimage to Medjugorje to experience the spiritual fruits that have matured there and receive a positive stimulus for their Christian lives.
She is the one who opens the way that leads us to Jesus. In fact, Paul VI, the great Paul VI, said we cannot be Christians if we are not Marian.
Since the first apparitions began in 1981, more than 40 million pilgrims from around the world have made their way to Medjugorje. Thank you. the Pope and the President, two men, one purpose, promoting peace. In 1984, the Vatican and the U.S. officially established diplomatic relations. Pope John Paul II played a pivotal role in establishing relations between the two states. EWTN's senior Vatican analyst and a native of Washington, D.C., Francis X. Rocca, has covered the Vatican since 2007 and shares more with us.
John Paul was elected in 1978. The next year, in 1979, he went back to his native Poland. He drew crowds of up to 13 million. 13 million people came out to see him. And he called for political self-determination. And that set the stage for the Solidarity Movement, the independent union. And then, of course, Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980. And when he became president, he also supported Solidarity. And so there was that convergence. And I think that certainly helped promote the rapprochement, the closeness that eventually led to diplomatic relations in 1984.
But what accounted for the prolonged wait for formal diplomatic relations?
Well, I think there were two major reasons. One is his traditional anti-Catholic sentiment in the United States. The United States is a historically Protestant country, and so there was a lot of suspicion of the Pope as an international actor. And then there was the more substantive question, shall we say, a constitutional question of the separation of church and state. And a lot of people were leery of having relations with the head of the Catholic Church. They're thinking that's a religious institution, it's not a nation state.
That same year, the Senate confirmed William A. Wilson as the first U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. The Vatican likewise named Archbishop Pio Laghi as the first apostolic nuncio to the U.S. But the relationship between the two states dates back centuries.
Indeed, from the founding of our republic, the United States has maintained consular relations with the papal states, and it wasn't until 1984 that formal diplomatic relations were officially established.
To celebrate the 40th anniversary of formal relations, the Vatican created and unveiled a commemorative postage stamp. The stamp shows the coat of arms of both states joined together by a ribbon, featuring the papal colors of yellow and white, and American red, white, and blue.
We wish to commemorate the history of our relationship with the Holy See, with the hope of strengthening and continually expanding our partnership.
The U.S. and the Holy See continue to cooperate on many global issues, such as the protection of migrants and refugees, interreligious dialogue, protection of the environment, and conflict resolution, in particular with regard to Ukraine.
Per lo stato della città del Vaticano, questa collaborazione...
For Vatican City State, this cooperation means being fully committed to defending the human dignity and rights of each person, protecting freedom, promoting justice, and defending the truth.
Per la promozione della giustizia e per la difesa della verità.
The U.S. echoed a similar sentiment.
La tutela dei diritti umani.
The protection of human rights, the promotion of social justice, and the protection of democratic processes, including in the United States, form the basis of this cooperative relationship, a relationship that is growing stronger all the time.
Sempre più forte.
We'll be back after a short break with a feature on the 800th anniversary of St. Francis of Assisi receiving the stigmata. High in the Casentino Valley, Father Massimo Fusarelli, Minister General of the Franciscan Friars Minor and the 121st successor of St. Francis of Assisi, blesses the world with relics of the blood from the stigmata of St. Francis. Pilgrims from all over the world gathered at La Verna in Tuscany to mark 800 years since St. Francis of Assisi received the stigmata on this very spot in 1224.
Per la famiglia francescana, ma anche per tutto il mondo.
For the Franciscan family, and indeed for the whole world, the experience of the stigmata has great significance. It is about suffering, which finds meaning in looking at the cross.
Guardando alla croce.
La Verna's natural beauty played a key role in St. Francis's experience. It was here that he deeply contemplated Christ's passion while meditating on the cracks in the mountain.
The Gospel tells us that when Christ dies on the cross, nature participates in this death. The sky is darkened, the earth is shaken by violent earthquakes. So this tradition that was thought applied to this mountain. Francis knew it, so he frequented this very mountain, meditating on the mystery of the cross, immersing himself in these splits. Francis begins his experience as a friar minor with companions, and then, in this place where he receives the stigmata, an important moment of his existence.
Le stigmate sono da una parte.
The stigmata are both a culmination and a new beginning for St. Francis.
Un punto nuovo di partenza.
This year's anniversary was marked by vigils, prayers, and a pilgrimage, retracing St. Francis's steps. Pilgrims from across the world reflected on the wounds that brought Francis closer to Christ.
It's wonderful to be here today. The opportunity to live such a significant event. Each day I woke up with strength to keep going despite my wounds. I received much more than I expected.
We came here for our honeymoon because St. Francis has been a huge part of our life.
My last name also means of the cross, Salibi in Arabic. So it's really special to our marriage.
Because when I wanted to be a sister, I asked the Lord that my title could be of the cross. That was like the one thing I wanted, and then I met him when I wasn't called to the religious life, and his last name means of the cross. But yeah, we're here for healing of our families, healing of ourselves, and a holy marriage, and healing of my face.
The week of our wedding, she received Bell's palsy on the right side of her face, so we're praying for that, for healing, so if you could all pray for that as well.
Marilyn and Peter chose to walk barefoot to offer their discomfort as a prayer, mirroring the sacrifices of St. Francis.
Every man or woman who suffers, when looking at the crucifix through the example of St. Francis, can find the possibility of a new meaning and a new life. Not because the wounds are erased, but because the wounds acquire a new meaning and give a new capacity to love.
As they walk the same path St. Francis once did, pilgrims are reminded that suffering can be more than just a burden. For Francis, the stigmata symbolized not only pain, but also a profound connection with Christ's love. After this experience, St. Francis, the first documented saint to receive the stigmata, wrote his Canticle of the Creatures while contemplating the natural beauty of this sacred place.